Okay. Hello, we want to welcome you to the Hero Maker podcast. I'm Dave Ferguson, and I serve as lead pastor at Community Christian Church, the visionary for New Thing, and the president of the Exponential Conference. And this is the fourth in a series of six podcasts on the Exponential 2018 theme of Hero Maker and the book Hero Maker, Five Essential Practices for Multiplying Leaders That Multiply by myself and Warren Burton. It will come out in February of 2018. For those of you listening in who maybe aren't familiar with the idea of being a hero maker, if this is a new way of thinking about leadership, maybe think about it this way. Everyone wants to be a hero, but few people understand the power of being a hero maker. A hero maker builds the platform and lets somebody else stand on it. The best leaders are not the heroes, but hero makers. They're the ones that shine the spotlight on others through whom they accomplish the mission. Or as one of my mentors would consistently say, my fruit grows on other people's trees. That's how hero makers think of their leadership. And today we're going to talk about the third of five practices, and it's the idea of leading as a disciple multiplier. And I have with me my good friend, Troy McMahon. Troy serves as the lead pastor of Restore Church. It's a large multi-site church in Kansas City. They've been involved in planting, I don't know, I can't keep track, but I know it's north of 40. Churches, and before planting Restore, he served on our staff team here in Chicago for more than 10 years, hold a number of different roles from the management team to business manager to facilities design to launching campuses and even more. And then prior to working in community, he spent 10 years as an engineer and a business unit manager for General Mills. And Troy and his great wife, Janet, have three terrific kids. Two of them were trying to figure out how we can get them married. Don't tell them, but that's part of our subplot. And Troy, good to have you with us.
Oh, Dave, what a pleasure it is to be with you today.
I thought maybe we'd start with, I know we're talking about disciple making. And I think in some ways when we first met, it was in kind of a disciple making setting. We call it apprenticeship. And I've probably told our story and our relationship as much as almost anybody. But if you don't mind, just for our listeners, give them kind of a quick synopsis on kind of our journey together and our kind of story of multiplying and church planting.
Sure, Dave. Well, it has been fun over the last many years. You and I get to tell our story in different settings because, I mean, God used you seriously as a hero maker in my life in a powerful way. But it's fun as we get a chance to tell our story. If you look at it, it's kind of this nice linear up the steps, start an apprentice that ends up with church planter, network leader. The reality is if you look at it from another dimension, that's kind of a cross section. It's this weaving path that has allowed us to intersect at different levels at different times. That's really, I think, given hopefully us life to each other, but also God's used it for kingdom expansion. Yeah, I can recall literally the day my wife Jana and I showed up at community for the very first time. I just completed my commitment with the Navy. We'd moved to Chicago to start my job at General Mills. We come into community. Church was different than we'd experienced before, but it was just a week or so after our first Sunday that we had a midweek service. And I remember my wife and I sitting at that midweek service, and we couldn't look at each other. I mean, we were overwhelmed with emotion when 20 plus people said yes to following Jesus, went public with their faith and baptism. And we saw really this idea of helping people find their way back to God, not just a vision statement, but being lived out in real lives, because every story was powerful. It was powerful stories. And it was that moment that really catalyzed us as we have to fully pour ourselves into what God's doing in this local church. So as lay leaders, we dove in, and I remember you and I having breakfast on a regular basis at Baker Square because I saw that you had such clarity of purpose and ability to communicate vision in such a succinct way that I thought I could learn from you as a leader in the marketplace. And it was through those many breakfasts that we shared that that relationship solidified that, like, over the next months and years that I remember when you made a request, hey, why don't you come join our small group? After we had kind of a journey down to Atlanta for General Mills and then back to Chicago, that you said, join our small group. We came in the small group. You invited me to be your apprentice. And so we're spending day every week some time away from small group, and you're pouring into me. And eventually you left and reproduced another small group, and I took over that group. And it was in the middle of all that I remember you had one of the ICNU conversations. And you really kind of sat there with me and said, Troy, God's doing some great things through you and in you at General Mills, but I think that there's an opportunity for you to leverage the gifting God has for greater kingdom impact if you'd make a vocational change. And I can remember at that point in time, I was moving from being a small group leader to a coach, and I was caught off guard. I love to tell people that, you know, that was back in the day before everyone had cell phones. So as soon as you had that conversation with me, I got left our meeting and called my wife on the home phone. I went to a pay phone. I had to explain it to my kids what that was. And I went to the pay phone and I called up Jan. Says, Jan, you won't believe it. Dave asked me to leave my job at General Mills and come work for the church. There was this silence on the other end of the line. And the first words out of her mouth were, "Are you sure he wants you?" And the funny part is I wasn't even offended by that statement because both of us had grown up in the church. We loved the church, but we had this idea that if you didn't take this particular path, if you didn't take the path of choosing kind of when you went to college, that you would do vocational ministry and get a Bible degree or a seminary degree, then you didn't have the proper qualifications to do vocational ministry. So here we're writing new code in our brain. And I remember even when you cast that vision for me, it took me a while to really receive that. And as we prayed about it, God opened some amazing doors that I made the change and came on staff at the church there and was able to play a variety of different roles with regard to leading the finances and some facility when we built our first facility there in Naperville. And then when God opened the door for us to start that second campus in Romeoville, it was just an amazing experience for me. And then, boy, I tell you what, as I'm reflecting, knowing we're going to have this conversation today, when I came on staff, we run a little around 700 people with one location. And when you eventually released my wife and I and a number of us to go plant Restore in Kansas City, we were 8 locations and running about almost 4,500 people at that point in time. Just God had done so many things in that transition that I had up close and personal experience to see. I tell you what was so cool is being able to look over my shoulder at each of the people that we developed that were either internal, that we sent out to plant churches, be it in places like Colorado or California or Michigan or New York City or Boston, Massachusetts, both those that were internal relationships that we had or people that we had kind of brought on to train up to send out as planters, was gifts that I got a chance to see up close that I think changed the course and direction of my life.
Well, I'll tell you what, and for everybody listening in, I mean, Troy and I have really good friends, but Troy, when he showed up at Community 2, occasionally you have one of those leaders that kind of walk into the room and you're going, and you just know, I mean, in your gut, you're going like, okay, this person's got it going on. How do I get close to them? And Troy was definitely one of those people that, you know, for reason we'll find out when we get to heaven, God just put an extra measure of leadership and charm and charisma inside of him, and so it made it kind of a no-brainer. And again, and again, to you, Troy, I was thinking as you were talking, you taking that risk of leaving the marketplace and coming on staff and taking the big cut in the salary and all that kind of stuff. Even now, you know, we have 6 people in our directional leadership team at Community. One's my brother. Another one came from campus ministry. But the other 3, you know, all came out of the marketplace. And I think you, in many ways, you talked about that leadership path that you took. I think you, not only is it a leadership path, but you kind of paved the way for a lot of other people. So, and not just the community, but a lot of other people across the country. Many people don't realize that since we were one of the early ones doing multi-site, I mean, I think you were probably the first person that kind of used the term campus pastor, at least that I know of. And a lot of people, you know, it's pretty much part of the common vernacular out there now.
I'll tell you Go ahead.
Go ahead. What are you going
to say? No, I was just going to say that I seen you conversation that you had with me, that you saw something in me that more than I could see in myself, has been catalytic for me. I go now regularly into environments and conversations thinking about that conversation to say, hey, how can I speak life into this individual that can call more out in them than maybe they see in themselves?
That's awesome. I mean, I know that ever since then, apprenticing and disciple making has been a value for you. And it's not something that you kind of do once and then all of a sudden you have a big church and you quit. Just so our listeners know, I mean, because I think Restore Now is right around 1,000 people with multiple locations. You're leading a network of churches. Who are you actually apprenticing on a regular basis now?
Well, one of the things that we've done consistently since we launched Restore, and even from the time back when I was your small group apprentice, Dave, is I've always led a small group. That it's one of those things that we value here, not just others lead small groups, but I get a chance. So my wife, Janet, and I, we lead a small group together, as a couple small group. And over the course of the last two terms, we've apprenticed Mark and Brenda. And so Mark and Brenda, we poured into, we get together with them outside a group on a week or every other week basis. And we kind of go through our, what we call our playbook that kind of talks through these, you know, five different steps. The I do, you watch, we talk, the I do, you help, you do. And what's been really fun about this one, this particular apprenticeship is as we've got to the end of this now and they're prepared to lead, they're not going to lead in small groups. They've actually had a discovery through this process that they're going to lead within our prayer ministry. So that is kind of as we got a chance to spend time with them over the course of the last two terms, which for us was about 6 months time period. It was just that we discovered that that would be the best fit for their passion, for their gifting. And so that's where we're going to, we apprentice them with the hope that they will lead a group, but we're releasing them to another ministry. And the apprenticeship process, it works at discovering that, because you spend time with somebody discovering who they are, not just can they do what you're asking them to do. So it's this discovery journey that we've been on that has been really effective. And so right now we're taking on Chris and Tammy. Chris and Tammy are starting as our apprentices here in just a few weeks as we begin our fall term. And they're going to be our apprentices, and Janet and I are going to spend time with them outside of group and then start with the I do, you watch, and then we talk. And we're really excited because we see that they have, I think, the right gifting and passion, hopefully at the end of this term, that will release this group similar to what you coached us on. And then Janet and I will go out and start another group, or actually we're looking at this next season for her to start a women's group, a daytime group, and me to start a fireside men's group in the evening.
Well, and for that very reason, when we began to write this book on Hero Maker, I used you as an example in there of someone who's a disciple multiplier, who's constantly apprenticing. Now, I know one of the things you did, too, it wasn't just in the small group side, but when you launched Restore, you started with leadership residents, church planters and training from before the launch. Now, tell our listeners, because a lot of them are either their church leaders or people who are thinking about planting churches, why would you burden yourself with leadership residents before you've got this church started?
Oh, Dave, the one thing that I learned in my 11 years at community is that a massive amount of learning happens on the job, right? And so you keep looking for environments. How can you create environments for somebody to learn in preparation? As we had the apprenticeship model in small groups, I learned in leading with you in order to prepare to lead when you were no longer present. And I thought, well, if that's the case, and we want to be this church that multiplies, right? The one thing I remember somebody said to me, says, Troy, if somebody cut you, that you would bleed reproducing. And I learned that, I got that DNA from being at community for all those years and seeing the impact as we multiplied campuses and churches. And so what would be the best way if somebody was going to plant a church or campus to learn than to actually be a part of one as it's being planted? And so that was the dream. Now, we didn't have the resources, right? We had enough resources available to kind of have just a core staff that would be cover children, worship arts, small groups, and kind of the visionary leadership teaching piece. But we wanted to have these additional, you know, folks join us, and we just challenged them to raise their own support. And it was so cool because they came from three different environments. One was a young guy just finishing college, right? So he could live on ramen noodles, all right? Somebody else was a very successful wealth manager who had made lots of money but was in the prime of his child-raising years. So he had elementary kids that were his kids. And for him to leave the confines of that secure job and come was a big transition. But again, because what you'd ask of me, it emboldened me to make the ask of him to do the same sort of thing. And sure enough, he was able to raise his support. The young guy was able to raise his support. And then we had a third family who was currently in ministry but wanted to be in Kansas City because that was their home to plant a church, that ended up taking this route to come be a part of us. So we ended up with three church planter apprentices who were part of this one. Now, what's cool is that all three of those guys are continuing to use their influence in the kingdom in different ways. So it's been pretty fun to watch that they've kind of used it to expand, starting new campuses or kind of leading the overall New Thing Network.
And I think, you know, we would both just encourage anyone who's listening, if they're planting a church, you know what, don't do it alone. Bring somebody alongside with you. Get a leadership resident. Even if you can't afford them, like you said, challenge them to raise their own support. And the experience of them getting to watch while you're taking the risk is just a great, great learning experience. One of the things that's happened, I mean, since then now, not only has the church grown, but now you're leading a new thing network in Kansas City that really is about hero making, multiplying leaders. Tell us how you got that started, kind of some of the dreams and that you guys have for what's going on in Kansas City.
You know, as Jan and I were transitioning out of community and spent a lot of time with you and the leadership team there, as you guys kind of prayed over and commissioned us and sent us out, as we saw the work that was happening there in Chicago and dreamed about what the impact could be in Kansas City, we really felt God was saying, hey, I want you to partner with me to be a, you know, to change the spiritual landscape of this city. And we knew that when we did that, there's no way that no matter if we became the largest church in Kansas City, we couldn't impact, change the spiritual landscape. If we had the most campuses, we couldn't. And so we knew if that was going to be the case, it was going to have to be this really reproducing movement of multiple fingers of church planting, having partnership, existing churches and such. And so that was the dream we had even with the Church Planter Apprentices when we launched. What God did, again, how you talked about me being a blessing in your life. When we moved out here, just early, about a year after we moved out here, God sent a lifeline to me, and it was your connection, actually, Dan Sutherland. Dan was at a new thing, multi-site meeting up in Chicago. He was making a plan to come to Kansas City, take over a leadership role at a large church. And you were the matchmaker. Said, hey, you need to talk to my friend Troy. I think his first question to you was, does he smoke cigars? And you reluctantly said, I think he probably does. All right. And sure enough, Dan and I have been getting together on Tuesday afternoon smoking cigars for the last 10 years. But what came out of that was, what if instead of just us two hanging out, if our two churches partnered together, two different churches, two different denominations partnered together, we ended up with a third friend of ours from a third denomination. We said, what if we could do this? What hadn't been done in Kansas City to our knowledge, where three different churches from three different tribes brought together resources, came together, shared money and people to plant an independent fourth church out of the deal. Well, when we did that, we all played different roles. They had more resources, money available. One from a geographic location was able to provide people. And since we were the new church plant, the church planter came and did a residency with us. Well, when Matt Miller came from Florida and moved to Kansas City, he did 9 months residency with us and then did 3 months at Westside with Dan Sutherland and then planted New City Church. I mean, he was taking the best of the transferable principles out of Restore with regard to reproduction. He was doing the community impact things that were coming out of Westside, and they planted this church. And instead of just planting and walking away, we said, what if we just continued to gather together, the three of us? And then the three of us said, hey, we've heard there's some other church planters out there. We know the church planters at times can be lonely. So we just said, hey, if you're a church planter, why don't you come hang out with us? And what came out of that was a new thing network geographically located here that now we have right at about 35 to 40 people participating, which represents a little over 22 churches. Wow. And, you know, 22, 23 churches. What's so cool is just in a couple weeks, we're launching two brand new churches who've been a part of the network since literally they showed up either in a leadership resident or in town, and they're both launching in September of this year. And so it's been fantastic to watch this be reproducing. Our dream is we'd love to see 100 churches planted in Kansas City in the next 10 years. Right now, we've got 13 that have been planted in the last 2.5. So, and if we can embed the reproductive DNA in those churches, then by the end of that decade, then we're going to see a number of those churches have reproduced once or maybe twice. And so it's not just starting the first generation. You're starting the first generation that can help start the second or third, even in this window of time. So, go ahead.
I was saying, I mean, Troy and Dan Sullivan are doing in Kansas City is one of the, I mean, shining examples of, I think, network building and collaboration really in the North American setting. And for those that are listening in, you really ought to kind of find out what they're doing. You and Dan wrote the ebook together, you know, the Exponential website. Remind me of the barbecue. What's the title again?
Yeah, More Than Barbecue. It was the name of it, you know, church planting movement, you know, and building a network in Kansas City.
More Than Barbecue. And you can, if you go to the Exponential site where our resources are, you can get that for free. And I encourage you to do that. Troy, I'll tell you, why don't you wrap it up? For those that are listening and hearing the story about Restore, the way it's grown, the way it's multiplied, now you're leading a network. Restore has been involved in a variety of different ways, whether it's locally or internationally, in 40-plus church plants. For church leaders listening and church planters maybe in particular, leave them with a challenge. Leave them with a challenge. What would you challenge them with?
Oh, I'd say live your life open-handed. When it comes to your people, when it comes to your resources, when it comes to your dollars, that it's easy sometimes to be closed-fisted. And I think the power comes from living an open-handed life. Our staff team just finished reading Bob Goff's book, Love Does, which I know is written 5 years ago. But in the middle of that book, he talks about how he challenges people that are doing a deposition and being challenged to literally have their palms up, because there's a kind of this place of submission and calmness that comes from it. I believe a life that's lived open-handed is one that is the life of freedom. It is not an easy life. It is a challenging life. It is one that makes relationships change, because you're sending people out. It's one where you let resources go when you don't feel like you have enough. But it is a life worth living, and it is the only life that I think will allow you to be the full hero maker you're called to be and to have the movements that God wants to see.
All right, thank you, Troy. I hope you all listened. I hope you all enjoyed listening to Troy's story, kind of gaining a few brand new ideas, maybe reinforce some old ideas about disciple multiplying. And if you'd like to hear more on this topic of Hero Maker, it is going to be the theme of our Exponential Conference. And the Exponential Conference will be the end of February, beginning of March in 2018. You go to exponential.org/events to register. If you'd like to pre-order the book, Hero Maker, you can go to, of course, Amazon or any bookseller to get a hold of the copy, get a copy of that. But just want to say thank you very much for listening.